photographing our license plate.
What are we doing for veterans returning home damaged physically and mentally, suffering from depression, homelessness, and suicide?
Why did the Supreme Court deposit corporate money into our electoral process?
Should we redefine middle class as working poor, or is it just another Wall Street merger?
What's really behind new voter picture ID laws in certain states?
Why aren't NBC, ABC, CBS, and Fox asking these questions?
Welcome to the Reasonable Voice Blog Talk Radio. I'm Marcello Rolando. The mission of the Reasonable Voice is to connect the dots between politics and finance, the need for better and more affordable education, our humanity, world peace, and of course, the arts, which we then gladly provide our listeners, the voting public, as informative food for thought to provoke their self-determination and appetite for equal opportunity. The Reasonable Voices are advocates prioritizing education, preserving our history, leading by example for a peaceful and prosperous world by evoking and embracing the creative artist and political unity as solutions to our challenges. Hello, this is Marcello Rolando, the Reasonable Voice. It's a very special day, National Voters Registration Day, and my two guests are involved with registering voters every day. First of all, let's welcome Dina Emlay, Director of Voter Services at the League of Women Voters in the Charlottesville area. How are you, Dina?
I'm fine, thank you.
And welcome to the show.
Thank you.
And also joining us today is Jerry Kruger, who is the League of Women Voters Community Engagement Director. And Jerry, how are you this day?
Oh, I'm fine, thank you.
Well, I'm glad to have you both here. I'm glad to have you both on the show. As I understand it, Jerry, you're actually in the registrar's office.
I am.
And this is the action happening today, yes, in Charlottesville. Is it at the pavilion? The National Voters.
Yes.
The
fire truck has just arrived. They're going to hoist a huge American flag at the top of the ladder of the fire truck. So it's causing a lot of attention.
Mm-hmm.
A young man came up to me. I found out he wasn't eligible to vote. So we talked about that. He wanted to know what was happening, and I explained it. So, hopefully, we'll attract a lot of attention, a lot of potential voters today.
Excellent. And some of the other things trying to get people to register, Dina, is pizza and balloons and the municipal band. Is that right?
Oh, really? We're pulling out all the stops to get attention for this very important day.
Excellent. And how?
I'd like to add that I made brownies and banana bread.
Excellent. Well, after the interview, I may head over. You know, we laugh and a bit, of course, and you have to have a good sense of humor with all of this, with what advocates and activists try to accomplish, that many Americans just don't see the necessity for it. But I think more than ever, we need to get out the vote. What do you ladies think?
Well, this is Dina Emlay. I certainly agree with you. The whole process is being subverted so much that we're concerned people will just give up and not bother to register and not bother to get to the polls because of some of the impediments that are in place now.
Mm.
So we're really encouraging everybody who's eligible to register and to go to the polls and vote.
Excellent. And I guess we should mention at this point that the League of Women Voters is nonpartisan.
Exactly.
You want everyone to vote, regardless of how they vote, as long as they're eligible. Yes?
That's very true.
Yeah. Jerry, how does the judicial system work with registering? I mean, I know there are rules because I've been a volunteer to get voters registered, and there's some very specific rules. Can you share some of those with us?
Well, of course, ex-felons are not allowed to vote unless they have had their rights restored. And this is something that Virginia and Kentucky
very slow
are the
on.
Only state
yeah.
that that will not allow to ex-felons to vote without having their rights specific applying for restoration after 3 to 5 years, I think it is.
Yes.
And then they have to have that approved by the governor.
Yes.
I had a young man I was just talking to because he noticed the fire truck, and I asked him if he had registered to vote, and he said, no, I'm an ex-felon. So I asked him how long it had been, and he that he had, you know, since he served his time. And he's been out of jail since 1988.
Wow.
And he didn't realize that there was any way that he could restore his rights and vote. So just now I was writing out Carol Foley, who works for the Virginia Organizing
Yes.
Advocacy Group, that is very anxious to help people like that. So I wrote down his name and his the group that he belongs to. And the man seemed very, very pleased. He had no idea there was anything he could ever do to vote.
I'm glad you've mentioned this because I've, restoration of rights is a big issue, as you say, in the Commonwealth of Virginia, as it is in Kentucky. And it even used to be more difficult with for Virginians. You know, they had to go to church and get letters for this or that. But there are organizations that and attorneys that specialize. It might even give John Whitehead of the Rutherford Institute a call and get some advice there too. But we're not straying off topic because we do want as many legitimate eligible voters to register and to vote as possible. But let's move on to some other things. Dina, what got us to even have a national voters registration day? It's a relatively new recognition, is it not?
It certainly is, and the League of Women Voters has been very instrumental in promoting this. Of course, the women, they got the right to vote through women's suffrage back in the 1919 and 1920s, were primarily interested in getting the right to vote for women. But of course, this was late in coming, and the rights to vote for everybody were in question. So the League of Women Voters has spent the last 93 years doing everything they can to encouraging and allowing and providing for the ability to vote.
That's an excellent answer, Dina. There is a historical roots to the need to vote, to getting the right to vote. And as you say, comparatively, women have very recently been allowed to vote. And now there's still women are not constitutionally even equal, which makes it difficult to get to equal pay for equal work because the Equal Rights Amendment, though passed by the U.S. Congress, still needs to be ratified by the states to be an amendment to the Constitution. And we still lack three states to make that happen. But
yes, women have been the last on the list of
So many things. Jerry, when I went to school, we studied civics. And in civics class, you learn the whole process of how a bill was presented, how a law became law, and how to vote and the importance of voting. Have we failed our students now with a lack of education about the necessity to vote? Or what do you think, Jerry?
Well, I know they still study some of that in their government classes,
mm-hmm.
but not until they're seniors in high school. And perhaps it needs to be emphasized more earlier.
Uh-huh.
So that by the time they are seniors, they're actually, a lot of them are old enough to vote. So I think we need to do more when they're younger so that they're looking forward to the day that they become 18 and can take part in the democratic process. So I definitely think we could do more in that respect.
Who do we approach for something like that? Is it possible even through the city council or board of supervisors to start at that level?
The Center for Politics at the University of Virginia
Yes.
has been very active in doing outreach to the schools in Virginia. There is a summer program for teachers who are going to be teaching government classes.
Mm.
Their schools. So there's been a concerted effort, and certainly recently, to do just that.
Well, I'm glad to hear that. The Center for Politics at the University of Virginia are incredibly active. And as a news reporter, I'm covering their opinions on so many things in the news. But let's, getting back to the history for a second, because one of the things we definitely want to talk about, I'm so glad that Jerry brought up the restoration of rights for ex-felons. But another thing now, Dina, that you and I have spoken about before is the new photo ID ID laws, and there are a lot of new photo ID laws across the nation, but in Virginia in particular, they've gotten a little more strict recently because the photo ID needs to be current. It can't be expired for longer than a year. What sort of special requirements does that put on, and what segment of people do you think, Dina?
Well, because Virginia, in fact, was the very last state to abolish the poll tax, and we have that honor, I guess you might say, Virginia has been somewhat in the backwaters of voter registration and this sort of thing. The voter ID law, which has come into being, is by many considered to be a backdoor poll tax.
Mm.
And so there's been a lot of effort recently to try to look at this issue,
mm-hmm.
and to see if we can perhaps in the future, or the near future, change the law. It has been changed over history so many times. I could really go into a complete dissertation on that subject. But the fact is that pretty much anything we do is taxed, but we consider the last free haven, tax-free haven, as being voting. And so the poll tax in the form of photo ID is of great concern.
Hmm. We're going to come.
I would like to,
yes, Jerry.
This is Jerry. I would like to add that to me, the photo ID laws are once again disenfranchising the poor and mm-hmm. the elderly. Research has been done to show that once the photo ID was instituted, the greatest impact and the negative impact was on the elderly and the poor. People who don't own cars or drive, don't have driver's permits, don't have a way to get to the registrar's office sometime to get that photo ID. Just as with a lot of other segments of our society, we have a certain segment of our society that seems to be disenfranchised more and more, being sort of shoved aside as though they're not important and they don't count. And this photo ID thing is, I'm afraid, once again telling them that they just don't matter.
Well, this is Dina. I'd like to add to that. This new voter ID requirement seems to be innocuous, as Jerry was saying. You know, it's you can make the argument, well, everybody can get a photo ID. All you do is go to the registrar and get one. It's free. But there really is a cost to this whole process, and that's why it does impact the poor primarily. You can obtain an identification card through a birth certificate or a passport. There are a long list of ways to get a photo ID.
Mm-hmm.
But, for instance, the birth certificate or the passport has costs attached to them.
Mm-hmm.
A passport
yes.
costs about $150.
Mm-hmm.
Getting a birth certificate is less expensive. In some states, it's more than others. But there's a fee attached. In Virginia, it's about $12. And to most of us, $12 doesn't seem like a lot of money, but if you're an elderly person living on a pension of about $1,200, $12 might be the cost of 1 week's worth of medication.
Yes,
$12 yes. fee for a birth certificate doesn't take into account the transportation costs associated with going to the DMV to secure the, quote, free voter ID.
Mm-hmm.
While the photo ID is free, documents and logistics required to secure it or not. If you're a Virginian voting in elections, it's a cost.
Sure, I understand. I think this impacts, as you say, not only on the elderly, but regardless of one's race, the economics of it, impact on the elderly and obviously on those less fortunate financially, but also these days it impacts on a lot of people don't have money or time. You know, people are working two and three jobs to make it and to take off time to go get certain extra requirements when you used to be enough just to carry your voter's card. But I'm wondering also, what do you ladies think about the new voters, the voters at college age or seniors in high school who are eligible to vote, but all of a sudden they're hit with all of these requirements and forms and whatever. Now, they probably have a driver's license, but I don't know. What are your thoughts about the new voter being affected by this registration?
If they have a driver's license that's out of state, which many UVA students are out of state, they can't use that.
That's right.
To vote. But they can use their student IDs if they have photos on them.
Okay.
I guess they do. I'm not sure.
This is Dina. I want to say that the information that's available to new voters, this is the first time that they're doing this whole procedure.
Yes.
And because there have been so many changes recently, or kind of, you know, off and on throughout the history of Virginia, but presently, just in the past few months, it's very difficult for anybody, especially young people who are unfamiliar with the process, to keep track of what they have to do and what they will be able to do, what photo ID they do need to have.
Mm-hmm.
And so this has been a problem for young voters.
Yes. So once again, I ask, what do we do about that? We have events like today on the downtown?
Yes. Fortunately for us, we have registrars throughout the state that are vigilant. They're good public servants, and they're spending all their time throughout the year, not just during election season, informing the citizens of what they need to do to vote. And they're not conducting voter registration drives.
Excellent.
The city registrar, I know for a fact, has gone to so many venues. They go to the retirement homes, they go to schools, to PVCC, to UVA, to the high schools,
mm-hmm.
especially in the spring when the students are more likely becoming 18 and it's more of a relevant issue. They go to all kinds of events. They have events like on the 23rd today.
Mm-hmm.
And this is what's being done in many localities. But I must say, because the League of Charlottesville and Albemarle also has other counties that are part of our responsibility, we have Greene County, Savannah County, Louisa, and Nelson,
mm-hmm.
in addition to Albemarle and the city of Charlottesville, that we need to be aware of and to help organize and inform voters. In fact, in Nelson County, there's going to be a voter registration drive on October 4th
uh-huh.
at the Food Lion in Lovingston. They have very little effort, really, in Nelson County, but the League is going to go and help them with this. And we're doing outreach in all over the state.
Excellent. I'm going to interrupt us for a moment, ladies. Stay with us, everyone. I'm talking to Jerry Kruger, who is the League of Women Voters Community Engagement Director, and also you just heard Dina Imlay, who is the Director of Voter Services with the League of Women Voters in the Charlottesville area, explaining that the League covers even this area. League of Women Voters is covering a number of counties and trying to aid voters of all ages, income levels, race, sex, whatever, to register to vote and then to vote on November 4th. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
And now, another film rental discovery.
Welcome to the Indie Film Minute. Harvey Weinstein of Miramax Films was apparently not that excited about The Apostle. Still, there is value in courting a proven Hollywood star. So when Robert Duvall brought his film to Sundance, Harvey bid on it. Heck, if he didn't make his money back, at least Bobby would owe him one. Charismatic preacher Sonny Duvall has always had a close relationship with God and conversed with him regularly. But he's also a man of heated blood, and when it boils over, he's in serious trouble, both spiritually and with the law. On the run, Sonny seeks redemption in the only way he knows, fervently saving souls, first on Backwoods Radio and then by breathing life into a dead rural church. Though a film with fervent religious belief at its core, what is most remarkable about The Apostle is its humanistic truth. No contrived religious manipulation here. With its surprising power of subtle moments, it fills us with a renewed love of film. Life is depicted in intricate depth, a worthy accomplishment by Duvall, its writer, producer, director, financier, and star. He was clearly possessed by an overwhelming passion, and it birthed a towering and lasting model of indie filmmaking. The Apostle. Not in theaters. Discovery through rental.
Welcome back to the Reasonable Voice Blog Talk Radio. Dina is the Director of Voter Services for the League of Women Voters, and we're also talking today to Jerry Krueger, who is the Community Engagement Director. It is Tuesday, September 23rd, which is National Voters Registration Day. So if you haven't registered by the time you hear this show, let it be a reminder to go register to vote. What is the cutoff date again, ladies, for the
October 14th.
October 14th.
Technically be the 13th, but that's Columbus Day. It's going to be the 14th of October.
Okay. Now, I wonder
I should add that you can get a photo ID up till the time of elections.
But you do have to register.
Registration that has the time frame on it.
Gotcha. Now, I have a current driver's license, so I guess that's fine. I have my old voter ID card, so I guess I'm good. But I want to touch on some of the things you were saying at the end there in the last segment, Dina. In 2012, I was part of a team that was registering voters, and a lot of people were used to sitting in front of a grocery store, say, and waiting, asking people as they came by. And I'm not saying this to brag, but I'm a theater television director, and I deal in volume, I guess. And I said, well, gee, why don't we go to large communities and churches and things, and we had some success with that in Crozet, and now the name is escaping me, the reason I'm telling the story, but the Home for the Elderly in Crozet, what is it called, the Mountainside?
I think it is Mountainside.
Yes, Mountainside. Anyway, the reason I'm telling the story is not to brag that it was my idea, but we went there as a team and we registered 40 people or something. And
remarkable.
Yes, and what was really remarkable, and the reason I'm telling this story, is that everyone, we not only want you to get out and register and vote, but we want you to get others, to help others to register and vote, because here's an experience I had, and it's just one of many I had at this one facility, this one day. A 96-year-old woman sat down next to me as it was her turn to register, and you have to fill out the forms, and you know, the forms are legal documents, and there are rules about how you have to handle them, et cetera, et cetera. But they teach you all of that if you want to help register voters, and they had taught me. So I asked if she needed me to write her answers for her, and she looked at me, I never will forget it, with this sharp glaze, and she said, I can fill it out, you just have to read it for me because the print's too small. And I loved it. I read it. I would read each question, and she answered it on her own, and then she looked at me and she said, it's very important to me that that I vote because I had a stroke not long ago, and they told me I might not be able to do certain things. And she turned to the doctor and said, will I be able to vote? Wow.
That's the kind of voter you need.
I know.
It's important. And
I think the young people need to hear stories like that and realize we all have to voice our opinion on how the country should run and be by voting. That's how you do it. And for, despite all the money and the photo IDs, you have to vote, because we've proven in 2012 that billions of dollars can be thrown in and new photo ID laws thrown at us. But if enough people are willing to stand in line and vote, the people are still the power. What do you think?
Well, you know, you touched on something really important, and that is, you know, how do you get encouraged or discouraged to vote? It's not just a matter of information.
Yes.
But, you know, as the cost goes up, voting decreases. I mean, turnout decreases when people get to the point where it's just too darn hard.
Yes.
To get all of the paperwork done. And young people are probably a little more impatient. They say, you know, why am I going through all this trouble just to vote? And, you know, my vote probably won't count. I'm just one person.
Mm.
But as you remember, very recently in our city council,
yes,
the makeup of the council was decided by one vote.
Exactly.
One vote. So whoever that person was, and it was could have been anybody, is responsible for the political process.
Exactly. Jerry, speaking of the political process, what do you think of, you know, things like ALEC and political policies? Yeah, I know it'll get you going, but tell us about it. Not everybody follows this stuff as closely as the present company.
Okay. I'm trying to remember now just what ALEC stands for. I know what you're talking about,
Dina's got it. Go ahead, Dina.
I have it. I know that.
Okay.
The American Legislative Exchange Council.
Yes.
All right. Basically, as I understand it, what happens is people, corporations, wealthy people, people with a lot of power and clout, are able to actually write bills that are introduced
yes.
into the legislature.
Yes.
And are voted on and passed. So basically, what's happening in a lot of cases is wealthy individuals or corporations are actually writing some of their laws. An example of that was the Trayvon Martin case, the right to defend yourself, use deadly force if you're defending yourself.
Mm-hmm.
That was an ALEC law.
Yes.
And as a result of that, a lot of corporations refused to have any more to do with ALEC. I think Walmart withdrew some of the big corporations, but that was an example of a law that was written really by a corporation.
Mm-hmm. I'm sorry to interrupt, but it is individuals and it is corporatism in some combination, and they actually, so that everyone gets it, they actually write the law that they want, the rich and the powerful, and then present that law to a lead person, if you will, in their state assembly, and that lead, go ahead, Dina.
I was going to say, because it's so easy, I mean, it's pretty difficult to write a bill, and often staffers work day and night to get bills written with the legislator.
Uh-huh.
But when someone hands it to you lock, stock, and barrel, it's much more likely it's going to get introduced.
And the only people likely to do that are the people who have time and money to dispose of easily. And, of course, they're going to write what favors their position. And if they happen to be the rich and powerful, they may not. Not that I suggest, and I stress this all the time, not all wealthy people are bad people. But there are some who hold on to power by controlling the power of our governments at all levels. Is that fair to say?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, the whole nut, you know, that needs to be cracked is power and its its impact. That's the power behind all this legislation, is to keep power retained.
Yes.
The parties in power want to retain power, obviously.
Yes.
And that has shifted over time from different parties, particularly the Democrats and the Republicans, and just in history, gone back and forth and back and forth. But power is the motivating force.
I always say that the number one job of every politician, regardless of party, in my opinion, once they're elected, is to get reelected. And then we come after that.
It's been said they spend about three quarters of their time fundraising and working on getting reelected, and about a quarter spent on actually being a representative.
Yes.
They leave that work up to their staffers, many of whom are in their 20s and 30s. We are really being represented by a group of young people.
Yes, who probably hope we'll do a better job of it than those with gray hair.
They're not elected.
Exactly.
We cannot elect them.
Exactly. That's the issue. You know, this all has a history, and we don't want people to think that suddenly the country is falling apart. It's just that more people are becoming aware of it, and that's a good thing. It's the half-empty glass is the wealthy and powerful have become, I think, not so much arrogantly, but desperate about its being flipped. I think 2012 told a lot of billionaires, oh my God, the people still have power. How did that happen? So now they're getting a little more blatant about, like with something like ALEC, trying to disrupt the electoral process. But on the fat full glass side, you've got the Rockefeller Foundation coming out and saying, okay, the climate change is real, and if fossil fuel corporations aren't going to accept that, well, then we're not going to support them anymore. So there are, there are good Americans, regardless of their income, regardless of their race, their sex, or how they vote. And we need to pull together and get this done right. But this kind of stuff, you know, even before Teddy Roosevelt and the trust busts and all of that, this has been going on a while. And I know, Dina, a while back you mentioned the poll tax. We hear those two words a lot. And I just wonder how much we really understand what that was. Because Well, you tell us. What are poll taxes?
Poll taxes? It's a way of raising money, but it has become a way of disenfranchising. I mean, it's kind of interesting how that history worked. In Virginia, the poll tax, I found, dates back to the first meeting of the General Assembly in 1619 in Jamestown. And a person was assessed £1 of tobacco. And the point of that was to compensate the legislature's speaker, the clerk, the sergeant-at-arms. And until the American Revolution, local governments were calling to their revenue by annually setting a tax rate for each male head of household, for every white male laborer and every enslaved laborer. And so between the Revolution and the Civil War, the tax on people continued to be the principal source of income for local governments. So it was a fundraising effort.
And now we have photo ID that can't be expired for more than a year. Thank you for that, Dina. Jerry, here's a question I want to ask you. I hope I'm not putting you on the spot, but can you tell those people who are sitting on their hands when it comes to voting or even registering to vote, what are the ramifications? We throw out quick little flippant statements like, well, then you get the government that the other people want. But really, can we give them some idea of the ramifications of not voting? Why should they register and vote?
Well, I guess this in a way answers your question. I had a student once that was old enough to vote, a senior in high school, and I asked her if she was voting in the upcoming election, and it wasn't a presidential election. And she said, no, I only vote in presidential elections.
Mm-hmm.
And there's so many people do that.
Yes.
They think that the one that that's coming up is not important because nobody's running for president. And they don't, I said, well, if you don't vote in this election, then there won't be people that will support what the president wants to accomplish.
Yes.
And that's one thing that I tell them, that it's so important to vote for the people that will support the measures that you want, that the president can't do it all. He has to have cooperation, as we know.
Yes. You know, and you make an excellent point that we do have to vote in the non-presidential elections, the off-year elections, if you will, because, and maybe the current administration is and Congress are a more extreme example of this. But if you don't like obstructionism, or however you see the problem, you do need to elect people who are willing to work together to try and compromise, and that means.
Right.
Every election is important, yes?
Every election is important. And there's so many good people that we've had in Congress that were defeated.
Yes.
Because people didn't think that it was an important enough election to vote.
Yes.
And, you know, I can think of some that were very apt to compromise, very apt to listen to the other side. But...
Well, yes,
the guy doesn't finish first.
Yeah.
Gary made me think of the fact that the process goes through, it starts with voter registration.
Yes.
It goes to the act of going to the polls and voting. But, you know, our job with the league and the registrars is to make sure that people actually go to the polls. I mean, wishing for certain things isn't good enough.
Mm.
You have to really follow through. You have to actually go and vote. And in some cases, people go through great hardship to do that. I mean, they stand in the rain and the cold.
Yes.
Stand on their bath.
You're breaking up just a little, Dina.
Sorry. Yes. I may not be on the best phone for you.
Oh, that sounds, you sounded good then. And you were saying that we need to get to the polls, which brings up another point I was pushing when I was registering voters. Ask the persons you're registering, especially now if you're talking to the elderly and they do not have a current driver's license and you're trying to get them some kind of current photo ID, you might also offer, can I drive you to the polls? If you got a little van, so much the better. Everybody, let's form a little line, who's going to take who, pick them up, take them to the polls. You know, people need help. There are a lot of people who want to vote who are really impacted by the new laws in a negative way and who need our help to register and to get to the polls. And Dina, you want to continue your thought?
Well, I have an anecdote which you may want to hear.
Sure.
The story of the political parties, of course, have contingents of supporters that spend their time getting out the vote. That's the big final push. And in one party, there was a woman that was contacted, a voter, by one of the party workers. And she said, well, you know, I just don't have a way of getting to the polls.
Uh-huh.
And so the person of that party said, well, you know, of course we furnish rides. I can give you a ride. She said, oh, would you do that? She said, certainly. So she arrived at the person's house and he got in and got them, she got them to the polls, and then the person was having difficulty, you know, getting to the booth, and she assisted her throughout the process. And at the end, she came out and she said, well, I voted for, and the name of the person,
mm-hmm.
and it turned out to be a person from the party that was opposing
yes.
the party of the woman who was giving the ride.
Yes.
So it was really a nonpartisan effort. You know?
Yes. It's, you know, and of course, when you register voters, one of the number one rules is that you aren't allowed to ask them who they're voting for, the party affiliation. And I mean, I have my own politics, as anyone does. But I really think the point is, the more Americans vote, regardless of whether they agree with my positions or not, the better it is for everyone, the better certainly it is for the country. We cannot allow a lot of money to run the country, but we also can allow just a few voters to run it. What's the average now these days of a percentage of voters that vote in a non-presidential election?
Well, I think it's you know, around the country it's pretty
embarrassing.
Similar. I think that you don't find usually more than about 50% of eligible voters who vote. I mean, in some elections, like the federal election, there's much more interest, as Jerry was pointing out. But in local elections and statewide elections and off-year elections, there's not as much participation. It's very interesting because, really, in those elections, there are issues that affect the citizens of the locality much more directly, and they should be much more interested in voting for city council, for the board of supervisors, the school board, and certainly for our congressmen and our state senators and our governor and all of the people that can be voted into office. Those people are very directly affecting our lives.
Yes. And we should also mention, we must run, we're out of time, but I do want to throw in that just as women have not always had the vote, young people have not always had the vote. It used to be you had to be 21, and now you can be 18 and vote. And that came about because of a war, you know, and the campaign that if, you know, they're old enough to go off to war, they should be old enough to vote. So
that was the 26th Amendment.
Yes, absolutely.
One of the latest ones.
That's right. So when you look at it, I hope those who are listening to us in the historical perspective, and you realize generations before you have done a lot to give you this privilege. And by the way, that's another point. Voting is not a right, like driving isn't. They're both privileges. And if you're just letting that privilege go by, then you're missing it. You really are missing out. In any case, let's end in an upbeat thing. We had two wonderful guests today on the Reasonable Voice Blog Talk Radio, Jerry Krueger, the Community Engagement Director of the League of Women Voters in the Charlottesville, greater Charlottesville area, if you will, and Dina Emley, the Director of Voter Services of the League of Women Voters in the greater Charlottesville area, working in a number of counties, including Albemarle, Nelson, and Fluvanna in Virginia. We're all hoping that the Equal Rights Amendment gets ratified. I think we can say that safely in this company. And we are hoping that today's event with the municipal band in the downtown Charlottesville Mall was a great success, and success is measured in how many people register to vote and then get to the polls with or without help to vote on November 4th. Have I about summed it up, ladies?
Certainly have. Very well.
I think very well.
How about, do we need a website maybe where people can go to get more information? Jerry, can you give us that?
Well, I can.
Okay. Dina?
I can. The State Board of Elections is one of the best. It's the Virginia State Board of Elections, sbe.virginia.gov. And that will tell you your precinct, where you can vote, what the, there isn't a, an amendment that is being proposed, and all the people on the ballot. So that's your best source of information. There are many others, but that one I'd recommend.
Fantastic. And Jerry, since you are either inside or just outside of the registrar's office in Charlottesville, is there a telephone number to call there that we can, you know, people can go get their free current photo ID?
The telephone number would be the registrar's office number, and I am walking right into it right now.
Yes.
Because I don't have it written down in front of me.
That's all right. We're on location.
Just a minute. I'll check.
And in the meantime, as we wait, I just want to thank everyone for joining us today and being on the show. And I beg of you, please register to vote. And you have to do so before October 14th, and then go to the polls. If you need help, ask friends and family. If you are friends and family, offer help to friends and family to get people to the polls, and of course to get the current photo ID and get them to register. Jerry, do you have that number for us?
I do have the telephone number. Okay. 970-3250.
Area code 434.
The registrar's mail.
Fantastic. All right. Thank you. Okay. Thank you, ladies, and all the best to all you do. It's been a pleasure having you on the show.
Thank you very much, Mark.
Thank you.
All right. Bye now.
Bye-bye. Bye.
Stay with us as we'll be right back with a final comment from The Reasonable Voice.
And now, another film rental discovery.
Welcome to the Indie Film Minute. One of the producers of today's film told us, as producers, we cannot control the magic. We simply put into place the elements where magic could happen and pray that it does. In The Station Agent, their prayers were answered. This story is as simple as it is universal. It is a story of the basic human need to connect with community. At the outset, we meet Peter Dinklage as Finbar McBride, a dwarf whose way of dealing with the cruelties of the world is to simply tune them out. Patricia Clarkson enters our story as Olivia, hiding from, rather than confronting, the death of her son. It takes an unlikely hot dog vendor to rebel against this isolation, as he seeks the interaction he needs to survive. He simply cannot accept that there may be people who choose solitude over his ebullient presence. His efforts to form this misfit trio into a mutually supportive society make for great laughs. The Station Agent is a poignant and richly told comedy. We come to care deeply for this community, and it's painful when we are torn from them by the roll of the credits. That is when we realize that we have experienced greatness. Independent film, where the real stories are told.
Hello, I'm Marcello Rolando, The Reasonable Voice, thanking you for joining us and becoming one of the reasonable voices heard around the world. Little do we know, we are missing it. The more time, energy, and bullets we commit to fighting against each other over that which corporate money needs us focused, the more we are missing it. Beyond the little blossom of life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness are the thorns of disappearing clean air, safe drinking water, quality nutrition, and even independent thinking. The little things that don't come cheaply, but freely determine individual and national direction. Half full or half empty, love or infamy, war or peace. So why, in a state-of-the-art devices overload, are we more scattered, preoccupied, overweight, in debt, and too fearfully disconnected to get it? A maze of polls, fog of phone prompts, and media blurbs blur our thinking, creativity, balance, truth. And we're missing it. The longer we prefer red versus blue over fighting for each other, the longer we miss out and the faster American fades away. Its automatic assault weapons, freely distributed by Pentagon puppets possessing little vision, sanctioning infiltration of little town America. It's the cash deposited in campaigns of Little Caesars to launder our elections with corporate and congressional bleach. It's failing to overturn Citizens United, to keep big money in and little people out. When we, the working people, are belittled by voter ID laws and states cut budgets and the arts, but keep financial hands off athletic programs, America scores very little. A little point of order. It's NFL bottom line greed and fan apathy towards spousal abuse, imitating bishops and popes ignoring abused children, that depreciates our greater good. Missing a little historical perception of Woodrow, he kept us out of war, Wilson, knowing too little regional history about ancient Middle East religious antagonism, and knowing next to nothing about just how much was left behind for the White House black guy to clean up. There is little truth in the news and little news in the truth. Now, Obama is neither saint nor messiah, but belittling a president dragged kicking and screaming into war while hailing to the chief of war crimes and cheering for scoring bullies, now that is the work of little minds. As Americans accept responsibility and embrace accountability, by extension, America's direction is exceptional among nations. But being exceptional means facing the truth about the not-so-little trends of Mother Nature's rising temperatures, confused seasons, solar anger, and global food consumption outpacing our ability to produce and corporate willingness to manufacture. To be made worthy of individual praise and international respect, we need more than a little awareness of and empathy for the sometimes muffled or disguised pleas for help from battered wives, abused children, and gun violence victims, including shooters. Hear those unashamedly paid $8.50 hourly and grasp the fact that millions of Americans go to bed hungry, while multimillionaires profit from fans of those who equate sportsmanship with scoring abused women and children as definition of manhood and the direction of our nation. And if we're missing this, soon our America will be missing too. Join us. Become one of the reasonable voices heard around the world. Thank you.
Thank you for continuing to listen to, support, and share the Reasonable Voice Blog Talk Radio with family and friends, especially online. We enjoy hearing from you, and in response, yes, we are now accepting new company and business advertisers and welcoming organizations seeking to be one of our sponsors. So please do continue to email us at thereasonablevoice@gmail.com. However, if you prefer to simply make a donation, your donations are greatly appreciated and can be made through PayPal by clicking on the donate button found at the top of the homepage of the Reasonable Voice. Website.
Thank you for joining us today to make every day as reasonable as possible. We hope you will download and share our downloadable podcasts. I am Marcello Rolando, the Reasonable Voice, hoping you will become one of the reasonable voices heard around the world.